All right, cool. Ladies and gents, welcome to MB Podcast. And before we get started, I just want to say thanks to everybody that's been supporting the podcast from season one all the way to season nine. And by the time you guys hear this, this is actually the final episode of season nine before we get into season 10. And let me just give you guys the background of like San Diego hip hop and like how what it's meant to me, you know? I want to give a shout out to the community of Ocean Beach, the MCs that I've met, the producers, the organizers, all the promoters I've met there throughout the years, these last 14, 15 years, played a major role in me, man. Always booking me for shows in the holding company, Winston's and the Harp and Gallagher's and Razzle House. And this next cat right here is one of the MCs that I've been building with these last 2 years. He's an MC, but also an event organizer. He's also a host. And he's been generous enough to really book me on maybe 2-3 different shows. And as an MC though, I think he's super raw. I'm really feeling the rhyme schemes and like you can tell he's not scared to be himself. And that's really a key in this hip hop, like the individuality, and he stands by it. I love that he stands by his message. For all those who are on YouTube, you guys can check out The Cult of Hemo. Got 12 tracks on there. Man, my favorite is Banquets and Doper. And if you guys are out there waiting for the new music to drop, he's working on an album right now called Lost and Found, and got a mixtape coming out too. And without no further ado, man, we got Hemo the person.
What's up, guys? How's it going, man?
Thanks for joining me, man.
Thank you. Thanks for having me in your place, I guess. Is that what we're calling it? Yeah. So you hear the cars driving by. thanks for the intro. I really appreciate it. And we spent some time doing shows.
We did some shows together.
OB over on Newport. That was the place to be, man. That's good. It's a good part of the history of building, you know. Right now, I'm branching out, kind of going wherever I can, but that'll always be a foundational place for me. It's like North Park and Queen Bee's, like back when I used to host that open mic over there. It's like, it's part of my journey, and it's one of those things where it's been 5 years now, and it's just kind of like, you understand there are peaks and valleys, you know, and you go through different places, and over the past year, I would say, I've been a little lost or a little bit, but I'm finally finding my footing again, and I'm getting regular shows about 2 a month, so that's nice. Right now, I got these 2 shows coming up in Chula Vista. One is on the 16th. They're both on Tuesdays. One is on the 16th, and then 2 weeks later, I'll be right back there. It's a comedy showcase, but I'll be opening it up with some hip-hop, so that'll be nice.
What's the venue on the 16th, on January 16th? Which venue is it?
Right now, it's I don't know what the actual venue is called. I was just told about, follow DJ Monkey Feet on Instagram. He does shows regularly. He's a DJ out here and everything. He's pretty cool.
Cool,
Adrian,
man,
is his name. He's a stand-up comic, too. Adrian Diaz.
Nice. Hemo, I asked all my guests, dude, where were you born and raised?
Right here, San Diego. But I was born and raised. I was born in La Jolla. Spent like a year and a half there. And then I came down to Poway.
Okay.
And then I grew up, I spent most of my life in Poway, and I went to, it was Midland Elementary, and then it was Twin Peaks Middle School, and then it was Poway High, went through the whole system. It was all right, it wasn't bad or anything. It was a safe place to be, but I found that I've gained a lot more experience being out in the real world, because that's suburban life. That's a suburbs of suburbs, it's a pretty... Yes. Closed off area. It's in a valley too, which makes it even more isolated. It's very much its own thing.
Oh man.
Yeah, we get some local sports, veterans out there and shit like that, and like you got a lot of money out there, especially up in the Palisades and all that. But I grew up right by in the center, right by Old Poway Park.
Wow.
I grew up right down the street from there.
No way, dude.
Yeah.
I lived not too far. I lived there for 5 years before I moved to Oak Park. I'm by not too far from that Walmart.
Oh, you're at the Walmart. I used to work at that Walmart, actually. That was my first job.
Nice.
Well, that was my first job I held, I'll say. Yeah, I was there for like 11 months, though.
Shouts to Player Sports Grill.
No, hey, I know the owner.
How long has that...
Mike, I know the owner, Mike. My mom would go there all the time. And,
how long has that been around,
that bar? That bar? Well, it used to be... I don't know how long it's been at that location. I know it's been there for years, though.
I love the community of Poway, man.
Yeah. It's really cool. It's good. It's a good place.
Really chill. Let me ask you this. growing up in Poway, how does that influence how you see music in any way? How you approach your music in any way?
Well, okay, so when I grew up, my dad... Well, okay, so let's go back. My dad grew up in Austin, Texas. The military family kind of moved around a lot, but he grew up in Austin, Texas. So he was in the source of, like, a lot of really hip music coming out at the time. He was born in 63, so the 70s and 80s he spent pretty much in Austin, Texas. He spent some time here in San Diego, too. But a lot of his influence comes from doing security at rock shows. And he would take a camera and he would get these really close-up pictures that were really sick. And he was a skilled photographer. So he would send the photos to the band members and they'd pay him for it sometimes. And like they'd say, hey, thanks, man. I really appreciate it. He built relationships with a lot of the people and stuff.
Dope, dope.
Yeah, that was really cool. So his foundation is like that classic rock blues thing, you know, and like the psychedelic rock and all that. So I grew up on that. You know, his favorite band was Bruce Springsteen and the E Street Band. You know, bands like U2, listen to some New Wave, you know, listen to some like Cure and stuff like that. Listen to some New Order, all that growing up. Peter Hook, you know, all that stuff growing up. David Bowie. And then I was pretty, there was a point where, so right around Twin Peaks Road, right? I was coming home from school and we were on a Ford Escort. And we were coming home from school. I was 15 at the time. My brother was 18. He was driving, or he was 17. He was driving, and he crossed double yellow lines. And we spun out and got T-boned on the driver's side by an F-150. So my brother like snapped his femur and like broke his collarbone. And then there were two other people in the car. One of them walked away from it. One of them got a concussion. But I snapped my femur. I shattered my scalp. I cracked my C123 vertebrae. I shattered my elbow. I broke my thumb, which is like nothing. But
How old were you?
I was 15. And I'm also, the worst part is I'm a hemophiliac, and I didn't have my medicine in me at the time. Hemophiliac means you don't bleed without the proper medicine because I'm missing a clotting factor in my blood. Shout out to the Hemophilia Association of San Diego County just real quick. They helped me a lot. But
So
I was a hemophiliac and I didn't have my medicine in me. I lost 90% of my blood and I got moderate to severe brain damage when I was 15. It was pretty rough, you know, and it was pretty isolating. I spent 2 months out of school in the hospital and then I came back and they put me in special ed when I came back. And I was like, man, I can't fucking do this. I don't want to be, I'm not special ed, you know, because I'm, you know, like I'm a normal, pretty intelligent dude. It's just that I got brain damage and I couldn't like help that. So they put me in there, but I really didn't belong there. And socially, I just went back into regular school, but I really wasn't ready for it either. Now, I never gave a shit about school from day one, so I'm not totally blaming it on that. I never did my homework. I was one of those kids that would always be like, pass with D's, you know, stuff like that. And, eventually it caught up to me, is a nice way of putting it, and I wasn't able to pass my geoscience class, so I graduated a little late. But most of the time towards the end of high school, I was spending a lot of it alone anyway, but that was pretty isolating. And I grew up in this suburban area and like, you know, classic rock grow up, and now I'm like sitting alone in my room and I'm just watching endless YouTube videos. And then one night, in the middle of the night, I wake up and Kendrick Lamar is on the Colbert Report. And he does Untitled 7. This is before To Pimp a Butterfly came out. This is Untitled 7. Yep. The Hollow What You Do, Hollow What You Say. And so I woke up to that opening, to that them coming back from commercial. And then Stephen Colbert saying, ladies and gentlemen, Kendrick Lamar. And then it just opens up and it blew my mind. This is in the middle of the night, you know, this is Colbert Report. And I just completely, after that, I was like, what the fuck is this? And I had to know what hip hop was, you know? So I spent a lot of time researching all this music stuff, you know, and like, what is hip hop, trying to find that out. And then the album comes out. So I listened to that album on repeat. And that makes me Google what's the best hip-hop album of all time. And that's Illmatic. So I get sent to Illmatic. Then I listen to some Wu-Tang recommendation from my brother's friend. Doggy Style, 36 Chambers. You know, I go through all the classics. And each one of these albums I'm listening to, I'm like a loop for a month. And then I did that from like 17 all the way until I was like 21. And we were talking about it earlier. I worked at that Poway right down, or right at that Walmart right down the street from my house. And I fucking, man, like, I was so isolated for so long. I didn't have any friends. I was just sitting down and listening to music, and I brainwashed myself into a hip-hop head. So then when I turned 21, right before I turned 21, I get put on suicide watch for my first time. I was 5150 because I had a lot of loneliness problems and all that. I was, you know, basically trying to kill myself and stuff. I never attempted it, but I did gather weapons and shit like that. So I got taken away. I didn't fight the cops or anything. And I'm put in the crisis stabilization unit on a 72-hour hold for my first time. I ended up going back 7 times. I know I'm rambling and stuff.
No.
Yeah. So I was in the CSU on May 4th. On May 5th of 2017, I want to say, maybe 2018, I wrote my first lyrics.
How old were you?
It was on my 21st birthday. So I wrote my first lyrics on my 21st birthday in the crisis stabilization unit on suicide watch. And I don't know, I met this other breakdancer there. That's what inspired it. It was like a connection to hip hop, and I really like saw it as an avenue to really find myself and give myself purpose and meaning. So ever since then, I wrote that hook for Undercover Brother, that undercover brother from another mother. And I'll fuck up your feelings like I'm a narcissistic lover, but I'll make you discover why you shouldn't handle your heart for supper. Well, at least before you fuck her. So that was the, that was the hook that I came up with when I was 21. That was the first thing I ever wrote. And from there, I spent time smoking weed in a car with my buddy Mark. And we would listen to hip hop, and I would rap for him, and I would like show him all these songs and practice a bunch. Then we started going to Queen Bee's open mic, and I went there like once a week for like a year. Then, COVID happened, and when it came back, I ended up hosting it. So that was cool. That was a good spot. And that's kind of where I come from, is Queen Bee's and stuff like that. But it was a long fucking journey, you know, and
how old are you now, Hemo?
I'm 26 right now. Oh, so
you've been at it for 5 years?
Yeah, about 5 years. Yeah,
nice,
a little bit longer than 5 years, but yeah.
Let me ask you this: mom's side of the family, any musical talents or music business in mom's side?
No, nothing like that. My mom grew up in the valley. She's passed now, but she grew up in the valley.
My deepest condolences.
Oh no, it happens, you know. I feel my way about it, but all that. Yeah, she grew up in the valley, and my dad, his family. So my dad grew up with like 10, I want to say maybe 11 brothers and sisters, and some of them had some musical talent. A lot of them could play guitar and stuff like that, and a lot of them were really talented and all that. I would say I get more of my artistic side from my dad.
I love it.
Yeah.
Let me ask you this. Your years of adolescence. I know Kendrick Lamar is probably one of the first MCs that really inspired you. But like, let's say the years of adolescence, like junior high years, what would be the albums you're listening to?
Yeah, I think we talked about this. Did we?
I don't know.
Okay, so. Well, when I was like in sixth grade, I really started listening to music, and I listened to Andrew Jackson Jihad, another AJJ. That was my sister's favorite band, like indie rock kind of stuff. Jehovah's Fitness and all these bands. I can barely remember most of their names now. MGMT. But I listened to a lot of that kind of stuff. And then I think it was like seventh or eighth grade maybe, when Yonkers dropped. And that was one of those videos. That was like my first exposure to like rhyming like that, you know, because I had this punk attitude, like this anti-establishment attitude. I always grew up with it for some reason. I was just sick of my environment, I guess. But yeah, it really spoke to me like in a really strong way. So I listened to that a lot, and I listened to Goblin a bunch. I didn't really listen to Bastard that much, but I listened to Goblin a lot. I remember that. But that didn't really get me to deep dive into hip hop, because it was sort of like anti-hip hop almost, you know. It was like its own. It paid no respect to like the past. It was like all about like fuck everything, you know. And but I mean, I spent time as like a punker too and stuff like that. Like, it's just, it's really against the system, and that's what speaks to me, you know.
I love it, man. Top 5 MCs you think that influences your style?
I was thinking about this today. So Jarve is on that list. He's out of Vermont. He's a really dope MC. He's underground as fuck. He did a show out here in Winston's. Let's see, Jarve, Big L. I would say Big Pun. Mm. I would say KRS-One and Rakim. I would say, if I were to give like five just right off the top, that would probably be it.
Top three hip hop albums that really affected you, like a damn.
Affected me. To Pimp a Butterfly would have to.
That's number one.
Yeah, because this is true for a lot of people like me, but that's what started my whole interest in hip hop, pretty much. So I would say that, and then, man, that's a tough question. There's so many good albums. Illmatic would have to go on there. And then Paid in Full. I would say Paid in Full.
Wow.
Yeah, I love the old school. That's what, I mean, there is a lot of stuff coming out now. You know, like, Melt My Eyes, See Your Future. Denzel Curry's fucking crazy, incredible. You know, JID's great. Like, there are a lot of good MCs right now. You know, everybody shouts out J. Cole. Yeah, as for where I come from, really, it's that old school hip hop sound. Like, stuff before I was even born, you know?
I got a chance to see Rakim twice this year.
Nice, nice.
The first time was at the LL Cool J tour in LA.
Yeah.
And then the second time was not too long ago, maybe a month ago, at the Music Box in San Diego. And I was right up front.
I was working that night.
I was right up front, like, yeah, right there. He was shaking everybody's hands and everything.
Oh, man, I wish I was there.
Rakim is still out here, man. Still outside, still doing it, dog. Ain't nothing changed. Crazy. For real, no. He's still out here.
He's a real MC, that's for sure. Oh,
man,
sure.
That's the originator of Nas and everyone's style that came after, man.
Yeah, it was funny because you listen to old Eminem. And it's like, this is just Rakim.
Oh, yeah.
Like, he's just doing the same. I mean, he's not jocking his style, you know, he's putting his own twist on it. But, like, his rhyming patterns are all Rakim, and you can hear that for sure.
You even hear a lot of Rakim and Big L.
Oh, yeah, and big time.
A lot of Big Daddy Kane and Big L, but I can also hear the Rakim and Big L.
Yeah, well, Big L was the king of punchlines. That was his shit. He could bring up, he was so clever. And it was just so sick the way he rhymed. I saw a lot of comments and a lot of threads on Facebook and stuff like that. One of the questions was like, what's your biggest what if in hip hop? And it was, what if Big L lived longer? I saw that like five people commented that. And it's like, yeah, dude, he was such a big influence. And I feel like a lot of people underappreciate him and they don't, because they don't know, you know?
I want to give a shout out to Jesse Swindle. I got a chance to interview Jesse Swindle. He's a filmmaker that has the rights, almost had the rights to write and produce the Big L autobiography called, the Big L biopic called Put It On. I know there were some problems in the estate of making the final, you know, there's some problems with the estate, and I dropped the episode 2 weeks ago. I got to send you this.
Yeah.
They can't finalize everything with the estate, so it's on hold. But the script's done.
Ooh.
And there was interest in Joey Badass playing Big L. And Joey Badass, it went viral where Joey Badass said, I'm down to play Big L.
Yeah.
So Jesse Swindle got a lot of things going with this project. And I think if we can spread the word, I think Hollywood should take a shot. He said some doors have been rejected. Some doors have closed on him. But he's still not giving up.
Yeah.
So for all those tuning in, I dropped that episode 2 weeks ago, fellas, Jesse Swindle. And let me ask you this. What are the top three producers that you think that influences you in picking your sound?
Well, what I'm creating different sounds as it goes. And as I'm writing, I'm always developing it. So right now, I would say J. Dilla. Absolutely. Absolutely. J. Dilla. Right, I mean, DJ Premier in the past a lot. Yeah, I listen to a lot of his stuff. But Kanye West right now, I've been listening to a lot of him. I understand. I didn't know I just learned the significance of, because I didn't get into hip hop until way later, right? So I didn't understand the significance of 808s and Heartbreak. I just watched a documentary like a couple days ago on it, and I was like, oh, okay, like this is what all the modern rappers are basing their sound on, is this. Like focus away from drums and stuff like that. But So right now, I would have to say, yeah, Kanye West would be part of that. And then one more. Oh, The Alchemist. I really like what The Alchemist has been doing. I'm really getting into all this, like, dragging along, like, this legato stuff, you know? It's starting to sound really good. And the way I'm connecting it, I'm able to slow down and speed up and, like, kind of change up my flow and stuff like that a lot more. I'm really starting to understand it on that level, you know?
What do you think of Action Bronson? I know,
everybody's so, well, yeah, I'm a fat dude with a red beard, so I get that a lot. Fat white dude with a red beard.
But what do you think of his music?
Yeah, I think he's dope. I think he's dope. He's most underrated. Action Bronson is pretty fucking dope.
You know, they come from a class where, you know, of course, mad props to Kendrick, Drake, J. Cole. They're the top selling, but the underrated people under that is probably Tyler the Creator.
Oh, Tyler, yeah.
Action Bronson,
yeah.
And Joey Badass.
They belong. Joey Badass.
Yeah, they belong in that class when they mention the top three. I feel like they're not mentioning the top six, top seven. Like, they don't get the love they deserve,
well,
man.
Tyler
does.
So,
but not Action Bronson.
Yeah, dude. I feel it. Well, he's with Rhymesayers. Rhymesayers is, you know, what really inspired me to first. Try freestyling was I heard Idea and Slug on the Wake Up Show. Nice. And I was like, oh yeah, man. And I really got into Idea and Abilities and stuff like that. I probably should have listed them as one of my top, but it's really good, all the different voices that are getting out there. One of the problems is, like, you can only promote so many people. So as much as I want to say it's fucked up that a lot of these people don't give voices, just like the market is kind of flooded right now, I would say. And there's so much talent out there.
A lot.
And the people who are getting the spotlight aren't necessarily undeserving. I wouldn't say that at all. I would just say that, like, if you don't know, like, there's no way of knowing. You just got to be there. You know, you got to know. You got to stay true to hip hop and really listen to everything. I mean, I just recently, you know, I love that Color show. I just recently started listening to, like, these other underground rappers from all across America and, like, hearing their flow and their sounds, and that shit's so fucking dope.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's just, you gotta dig deeper. There's so much good content out there, you know?
It can get cluttering sometimes, but when you come across some great MCs at these shows, man, you just know who stands out.
Yeah.
And Himo is one of them. Like, I've done shows with Himo at the Holding Company, and the turnouts have been great. I did a show with you at the Rassel House. That turnout was raw.
Oh,
like,
dude. Yeah.
I remember rapping on the wrestling mat, on the wrestling ring. And just people was raw. People was fucking with it. Let me ask you something. Tell me about the inspiration on your project, The Cult of Himo. What's your fond memories of making that project?
I produced it mainly with Wally. Wally is a producer and he's a sound guy. And he works, I think I saw him working at, what was that place called? I saw him working downtown at a venue. I can't remember where it was. He was a stagehand, though. But he's fucking, no, man, he's a really good producer. He's so fucking dope.
Yeah.
And he basically produced the Cult of Himo with me.
Yeah.
And we recorded that at Queen Bee's, too.
Yeah.
So that was fun. It was like a professional studio, and I really got, good, and writing everything, it all just comes from my heart, you know. Whatever the beat makes me feel, that's what I write down and that's what I rap. So freestyles and all that, like, you build the vocab and you try to see how to attack sometimes the same topic from different angles, or sometimes different topics from the same angle, you know.
The skit and doper, and there's a skit and doper that was making me laugh.
Oh yeah, a wackadoodle. That was C-Run. C-Run is great. You know, C-Run, shout out to C-Run.
Shout out to C-Run.
Shout out to C-Run.
I done many shows. Yo, I got it.
Okay, bro. Real quick. Shout out to C-Runs and shout out to MC Really Real. Shout out to the Rapscallions.
Shouts.
They're fucking killing it right now. I love what they're doing. I always loved their sound. And when I first met MC Really Real, I was like, you should fucking meet C-Runs. Mm-hmm. And I ran into C-Runs. I'm like, you should meet MC Really Real. Apparently, like, they knew each other and, like, a bunch of people always wanted them to work together, and they finally did it, man. That shit, I love that project that they dropped. Like, they're dope as shit. Look up Rapscallions on all your streaming stuff. They're dope.
Shouts to C-Runs. I've been running into C-Runs for years at the shows, man. Ladies and gents, I can't describe Ocean Beach. It's like there's something going on in that scene. It's a thriving scene, man. And,
yeah.
From beat battles to beat sets, And there's some legendary artists that be coming down to the holding company. Hip hop is alive in Ocean Beach.
Oh, dude. Yeah, big time. I just saw Exhibit there. That was a dope ass show. Fucking J.O. Felony came out. Yeah. Oh, dude, that shit was so tight. That was amazing. That was incredible. The THC always gets really good people coming through. I just saw recently they had like two big fucking names. Help me remember them. Is Talib Kweli coming there?
He's coming. Immortal Technique's
coming. Immortal Technique. Yeah, dude. Those shows are going to be fucking incredible, man. I'm so excited for every time. Like, there's always like four or five. No. More like five or six, sometimes eight times a year that like they bring out like a really, really raw, really original hip hop artist from back then. And like, it just fucking, it's so tight every time.
I love it. Let me ask you this, man. Tell me about your upcoming album, Lost and Found. How's the process for that like?
Well, so
how's that going?
It's called Lost and Found because I got locked out of my fucking Google account. So I had like 9 tracks. Uh-huh. I had the instrumentals for them. I was getting ready to record them. And then my computer just took a shit on me and like just fucking crapped out. I looked it up. It'll take like a few hundred. Oh, I'm good right now. Uh-huh. Thank you. I don't have the money to fix it right now, right?
Yeah.
So I've just been practicing and writing this new shit, and always when you write the new shit, you forget about the old shit. So I've written about like 5 tracks right now, still up for this project. But then recently, it might be a longer, because I always do 12 tracks. It's 2 skits and 10 songs. I might do a longer one because I just got back into my old Google account.
Right.
I got all this fucking work back and all these projects that are fucking, you know, it's coming together, and I'm going to make like this super long album, and it's going to come out on my birthday.
What's your birthday?
May 5th. It's set in for May 5th. I just started talking to people with studios and shit like that, producers, and it's coming together. I have the poetry and the lyrics for it. It's approaching it from like a much more serious and like a much more real angle than I have before, because I know a lot of my raps like rely on those punchlines and rely on that comedy and just the funny shit I talk about. But this one's just going to be talking about life and like the way I've come to understand it from where I've been living. And the last two years ago I was in Chula Vista. 1 year ago I moved out here by La Mesa. And it's just like, you know, I'm out on the street and everything. I don't fucking drive. I'm walking down El Cajon Boulevard and like running into all these people, you know. Some of them are my friends, but a lot of them are homeless. And it's like fucking, you just see people running and the shit that they talk about and the stuff that they go through. It just makes you look at life in a totally different way. So it's that coming of age story that I'm really hoping to translate with this project, you know.
I love it, man. Who's making the beats on this one?
It's a mixed bag. It always is. I got some beats from like Lethal Needle. I've been going on BeatStars and getting a lot of those. I think I have some tracks from Mike Mackey. Once I could get access to my account again, I'll have stuff from Mike Mackey. He's a big local producer out here. Recently, he's been chilling out, and he's really taken like a religious leave. But there's some from him, and I'm trying to think of other names, but right now, that's about what I can remember about the producers on the project. A lot of it is BeatStars though, and just finding beats that work on the internet.
I love it, man. Do you like organizing shows? Which one do you like better, performing at shows or organizing them? Hosting them?
Okay. So really, what I think about myself as an artist is, as an artist, I feel like I'm dope and I'm good at the art form.
Yeah.
But I feel that I fucking suck at hosting.
It's all good.
And no. But here's the thing. So I suck at hosting and I suck at like organizing shows and shit, you know?
Yeah.
I've thrown a couple and then like I can't get anybody to come out. I put out ads and like I'm trying, you know? I put up sick lineups and then like shit just always falls through. It's ridiculous.
Right.
Like, but that's like growing pains, you know? So I'm getting my skills up as one of those organizers. Dustin was able to hook me up, luckily. He's our mutual acquaintance, mm-hmm. a mutual friend. Yeah, he was able to hook me up with some sick spots at the holding mm-hmm. company. And, like, one time I did a 91X, I did a 91X interview, and I was able to, like, get a sold-out show, yeah. you know? So I always tell people I got a show, sold-out show at the holding company. But in reality, like, I really got to work on promoting and get my stuff out there. And, like, but I've been in my hidey hole for the past year as well. And I've just been writing and getting influence. So I'm really trying to break out there now with these shows and this stuff I've been working on the past few months. I went up to Huntington Beach for a little bit. That was good.
Shout out to Chaos. What up, Chaos?
Yeah, shout out to DJ Chaos. Shout out to DJ Monkey Feet again, you know. Thanks to those guys for the opportunities, and I'm gonna try and take these and see if it leads anywhere, and trying to go, you know, stay with them, but also try and see if I could get any other shows going or anything, you know, just trying to keep moving, on working, you know.
I'll keep building with you off air. We're gonna keep in touch. Yeah, man. So let me ask you this, like, 2024, what are some of your goals you want to accomplish this coming year?
Well, I want to release an album and a mixtape. Working on that album, Lost and Found, that's going to be way bigger, and that's going to come out on May 5th. And then I'm also working, I just got a couple tracks written for this J Dilla mixtape that I'm doing, where I'm going to take all the instrumentals from Yancey Boys, and I'm just going to put my spin on it. And so far, it's going pretty good. I got a couple songs struggling. And I can't remember the title of the other one. I just wrote that other one, though. And so, yeah, you know, working towards those projects, a lot of writing to do. And I'm hoping to get a lot more shows in, too. Because I have been doing it for the past couple months, like I said, 2 shows a month. But I just want to keep on pushing, seeing what I could do. Maybe work on, like, merch so I can start seeing some profit from this, you know, shit like that.
Any plans for a music video to push any of the singles?
Yeah, of course. Yeah. I've been talking to people about videos for a while now. I just got to get these tracks recorded. And once I get them recorded, then I can start shooting a video. I got some storyboards that I worked on. And I got some people that I've been approaching. But it's all in the talking stages right now. Hopefully we can get that organized before the release date. Because mm-hmm. it is coming out on May 5th, no matter what. Mm-hmm. I don't care, you know, about anything else. That is a promise date that I am dead set on.
Mm-hmm. What's your thoughts on marketing, advertising, promo? Is it difficult for you? Is it something you enjoy?
So no, I don't enjoy it. I'm an artist. That's the thing. It's like, yeah. I figure if I were to spend time on like marketing, not to get all pissed or whatever, but like, one of the things about this mainstream shit is like, a lot of it is sacrificing who you are for what the audience wants, you know. And they say, like, keep true to your heart, and like, that's what's gonna bring you the best, like, acceptance from everyone, you know. And that's true, but just people aren't gonna share your shit, you know. If you want to go viral and you want all these things, you gotta kind of, you listen to all this shit that gets millions and millions of plays, and a fucking brain dead monkey could write that shit, you know. Yeah. Like, and it's like, okay, whatever I got is obviously not as marketable, but I think my shit's way better than like 90% of the shit you be hearing on the fucking radio and all that. Mm-hmm. So I'm not concerned with trying to go viral or trying to get like a huge crowd, because I know that what I want is what's purest and truest to my heart. Mm-hmm. So that's really what I've been focused on as an artist. If I run into somebody who's like, hey, I could, you know, be your agent or be your manager or some shit, you know, mm-hmm. I could help you sort and organize all these things for marketing, then I'll start doing that, because I won't need to use this brain power on it. Mm-hmm. But right now, 100% of the time, I'm freestyling or writing, and I just want to fucking stick to it and trust the process and really push through and try to make something special.
Nice. To all my indie artists out there, man, I know it's a tedious task. But I do got to say is that after the album is recorded, you're not done.
No.
It's time to promote and advertise the album or the single. And me, I'm 39 years old, been releasing albums and mixtapes nonstop since 2005. I definitely been learning more as the years go by on what marketing and advertising and promo really means.
Yeah.
I got a chance to interview, because, you know, this podcast is really like, it's, you know, me being in the mental health field, working with kids with autism. It's mental health, but it's also music industry commentary. I got a chance to interview Taylor Swift's manager for the first two albums from the time she was 15 to 18.
Yeah.
But he also had a lot of experience in being radio program director. And he's worked for Kiss FM, and he's put together radio promo tours.
Mm-hmm.
What I learned some things. He said in these TikTok things, the world now is trained to watch something for 30 seconds, and that's all they got time for. And 15 seconds, that's all got people got time for. 30 seconds.
Yeah, audience retention is ridiculous now.
So he was like, if you shoot a video, it does not have to be the full 5 minutes no more. You just need to shoot a snippet of 1 minute. And it's hard for me to, like, to swallow this kind of, like, wow, this is crazy. This is the new world we're living in. And,
yeah, it's so different, especially with you, like, being, you know, so much older than I am. Like, you see it from a, you see it, like, pre-internet and shit like that.
Yeah.
Like, your perceptions, like, I've never been an adult without a smartphone. Isn't that crazy?
I'm thanks a lot. Thanks a lot for pointing it out. I'm Uncle Marlon D, right?
No. But what I'm saying is, like, the reality has shifted so dramatically. You
oh
know?
Yeah, it's pre-internet.
If you're not online, you're non-existent right now. Uh-huh. That's really how it is.
Let me ask you this, man. Why is it that people have short attention span now? And what do you think is gonna grab people? So anybody with a camera can put a video out on YouTube. Anybody with Gmail can put anything out on anything. Everything is so quick access. What's gonna make you stand out with all the 1,000 links? What do you think is gonna make us, an artist, stand out with everyone?
Well, see, I haven't given much thought to it, but really? Now that you mention it, I think, like, you, in those 30 seconds, let's say, you have...
Can you pack them?
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
30 seconds left?
In those 30 seconds, that's your window of opportunity to grab someone's attention enough mm-hmm. and put them on your own mm-hmm. page and mm-hmm. direct them to your link or whatever. Mm-hmm. So, like, you, that's the real trick, is trying to get them to move from that little commercial, basically, that you're mm-hmm. making and put it out into the world like that. Something that it does really sacrifice, like, the old school, I would mm-hmm. say, from where I come from, where I'm listening, you know.
Mm-hmm.
The big difference would be that songs are so much shorter now.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, they have to change so much to be, like, keep anyone's attention, you know. I'd like to think I'm any different, but I didn't download TikTok. I did, I think, a few times, but I never stuck with it. And I always thought I was, like, a higher level. Like, oh, man, I'll never be one of these Zoomers, you know, that's can't pay attention for that long. Like, I'm not going to do it. And then they got me with the fucking Reels on Facebook. So I'll sit there and watch Reels for, 30 minutes. And I'm just like, fuck, dude. Like, I caught myself a few times. And I was like, damn, like, fuck. Like, I'm part of it, you know. It's just the way the human brain works. But now it's the goal to get somebody down a rabbit hole on your shit, you know. It's like, whatever you're talking about is what you want them to look up, you know. So if, in a way, if you're able to rap about rapping or rap about, like, your perception and able to translate it in those 30 seconds, then you're fucking, I think that's the real place you want to set it, you know. Yes. It's all about that little window that you got.
Amen. Let me ask you this. Who are the MCs you're listening to right now that's inspiring you at the moment?
I was just listening to Denzel Curry, and he said, so for this album, I listened to this album and this album, and they kind of influence my thing right now. I would say for the artists who are influencing me, here, let me get my phone, let me see what I'm listening to. I'll give you the honest answer right now. Off the top of my head, I always forget this shit. It's like I got that attention span problem or whatever. Hold on, I just organized my phone, so it looks a lot nicer. Go to my Spotify. All right. Oh, so I've been listening. Oh, Cool Keith. I saw Cool Keith.
Cool.
Over at Whiskey A Go Go in West Hollywood. That shit was tight, dude.
Yeah,
dude.
Back house.
It was fucking incredible. Yeah, a lot of folks
came out.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. The crowd was really sizable. I bought my ticket early. They ended up cutting the price in half, but I didn't care. I bought $50 tickets.
Dope.
And fucking, I went there with my dad.
No way.
He's not really a hip hop head, but I just brought him because he gave me a ride up there. I usually take the train up because I had that show at Huntington Beach. Anyway, so fucking, but yeah, I got to see him. I was front row. You know, I saw like just a legend spit his shit, and it was ridiculous, man. I love that. It was so good. Okay, so I've been listening to Unlocked, which is Denzel Curry and Kenny Beats. I just started diving into Lupe Fiasco, Food and Liquor. Slum Village. I've been listening to a lot of Fantastic, Volume 2. And then Pimp to Eat, I would say. Deltron 3030. Comparison by Beyond. He's a rhymesayer. Lifestyles of the Poor and Dangerous. Fun Crusher Plus. Blockbusta. Busta Rhymes came out with that new album.
What'd you think?
Oh, dude. I thought that was fucking ridiculous. I think he was able to bridge the gap between the old school and new school. I think that's what his goal for the album was. And he really fucking did it. That was good. And then I listened to Twisted also for the first time. Mm. Twisted. They're pretty good. That's like Juggalos before ICP and stuff like that.
Oh.
And then I listened to Afro, Jarve, fucking... Three Melancholy Gypsies. You know 3MG?
I heard that.
You know fucking Murs and Scarab? Yeah, dude. That's fucking... I love... I've been listening to a lot of that stuff. Figures of Speech, that whole Project Blowed thing, they're a big influence. Well, sorry, I could talk about this this for fucking hours, but yeah, man, those are big influences.
There was this strange, weird project that came out the day after Christmas, and I didn't know this, but 50 Cent released a Christmas project in 2005 that Cook and Soul remixed. So there's a 50 Cent Cook and Soul mixtape. On Apple Music.
Yeah,
right now.
I found that too. Yeah.
But I did some research. It really originally came out in 2005, but it's available for Apple Music for the first time.
Yeah.
And dude, guy, I'm telling you, this Christmas mixtape by 50 Cent is ridiculous.
It's the Cook and Soul one.
It's fire.
Right?
This was fire,
dude. Cook and Soul's ridiculous. Cook and Soul. He did one with Biggie Smalls. He did one with MF Doom. They made a bunch of Christmas albums with all these like legends of hip hop. I love all of his mixes, and he's just such a good DJ and shit.
And you know what's crazy? Yeah. I don't see 50 Cent promoting it once. Like, yo, one post from 50 Cent on IG can shut this. Yo, I'm telling you, like, there's a mixtape by 50 that's banging right now. I've been studying a lot of Outkast. When Taylor Swift manager told me, like, you know, the songs on radio these days has to start with a hook.
Yeah.
They prefer the songs to start with a hook and make it preferably under 3 minutes long. I've been listening to that.
Sorry, just, you know, I make music. Anyways.
Say what? What'd you say?
I say, you know how I make music. It's the fucking, I just spit, you know. I don't give a fuck about the hooks usually.
When they listen to Outkast music, they are one of those rare ones that figured out how to stay who they are, but for some reason it fucking worked on the radio.
Yeah.
Outkast has the biggest hits ever on the radio, dude.
Yeah.
But they're so unique too, like, I don't know, I can't explain it. They figured it out.
Yeah, they found out a mix.
Who to be exactly who they are, but please the radio.
Yeah, well, that's what I mean. People like Tyler figured that out too.
He did.
Yeah, it was crazy.
So did Kendrick.
Yeah. But like the way fucking that was a big shock to me. Like I saw him on Jimmy Fallon, I think it was.
Yeah.
It was that the show where he fucking, was it Kimmel or Fallon? Where I know it was some late night show. Where he just fucking Wolf Gang jumping around and getting the actors' faces and shit. That was so fucking dope, dude. Yeah, but it's weird. Like, punk is becoming like, it's like that crossover that happens where it's like the punk becomes mainstream, and so then the punk becomes like that almost like you know, just stuff that's like not with the current vibes and like the current time, you know, is like it's weird that the rebels almost became like the like conservatives and shit like that, you know. Mm-hmm. And you see that bleed through in the culture too, the voices that are really standing up and trying to say their shit, like they're the ones who back in the day would have been doing that, but now it's like they have their voice and they have their platform. It's interesting to see the way the tide shift and that horseshoe and everything, you know. Mm-hmm. Because I'm 26, so I'm at an age where I'm seeing this for the first time, really. And it's different.
And I wanted to revisit this, man. Speaking of Poway, I wanted to go back to this a little bit. You know, when All the Small Things came out by Blink, 182 came out, their biggest breakout, like, hit. I was 15 going into freshman year high school.
Yeah.
I always knew they were from SD, but I didn't know which part. And recently, I saw this old documentary about them. They're like, they're from Poway.
Yeah.
When did you realize Blink-182 is from Poway?
Well, that's what everybody says that shit. What I mean, and I think it's...
Did you know that growing up?
Yeah. That was... Everybody said that shit. And I know... So, it gets exaggerated, you know?
People
will say, like, all of them went to Poway High for four years. No, yeah. One of them that I know of, they moved around a lot. They're like Bobby Lee. Bobby Lee, the stand-up comedian, also went to the same high school I did. He was on the Poway High wrestling team.
No way.
But anyways, he was on Mad TV and, you know, did all that shit. Yeah, that's something that a lot of people don't really talk about compared to Blink-182. But I don't know what it is about the environment. I think it's because it's so isolated or something, and everybody's background is so interesting. But, I just know that one of them, I can't remember which one, went to Poway High for, like, a semester, and then they got kicked out for drinking at a fucking football game, which is punk as fuck, you know? I really appreciate that. But, speaking of the topic on punk becoming mainstream, you know, it's like the pop punk sort of scene, you know? It's, like, different than what the rawest and the original punk scene comes from.
No doubt.
And hip-hop and punk share a similar cousin, and they share the same space, you know?
I cannot wait.
It's really the language of poverty is the music that we make, you know?
Ladies and gents, after the interview, I'm going to play Hemo. Shout out to Transformer, man. We got 28 songs done in the span of... in the span of 2 months, and we split it into two different albums. So the first album is called Pull Up, and it's 13 songs of course hip hop with some influence of reggae, ska, and some more live acoustic guitars and bass. But the second album we got is 15 songs of nothing but pure punk rock and hip punk rock and roll. And I can't wait to play Hemo this, man, because I think I've been influenced by everybody that came before me as far as that rap rock genre. And don't you feel good when you know you created something dope?
Yeah, like something that you truly like feel like, oh man, I really fucking did it. And that's always a good feeling.
And ladies and gents, it's been a while since I felt excited about an album. Meaning, this album right here, we even created the private SoundCloud link to send it to our dearest peoples in their hearts before we put it out in February.
Oh, nice.
Just to get some feedback. But, you know, Marlon D really fucks with you if he pulls up on you and plays it for you in the car. Like,
yeah.
Like, meaning, I gotta play something raw for someone raw. Like, like if this guy feels it, I know I got something, you know? Because, you know, real recognize real. I know who are, like, real, like, lyricists, bro. Like, the good news is you're 26, still prime. You're gonna grow so much more too if you keep doing this, keep writing, stay writing, and you never know, dog. As your career gets bigger, you have no other choice. It evolves into a music business. Whether you like it or not.
That's what I'm saying.
No matter how much you kind of try to avoid it.
Yeah, I don't want to rush it or nothing.
Sorry, if you're gonna get it, the doper you get.
Yeah.
The more consistent you become, the more visible you become, it's gonna turn into a music business. And what are your top advice for those trying to get in, for the youth, those who got some rhymes in their what are you trying to advise for them trying to get in this rap?
I would say follow your heart, man.
Amen.
It has led me so many great places. That's all you could do is just stay true to yourself and who you are. Just keep on trusting that, you know, and you're gonna figure out the journey as you go along.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm good on that right now. Amen, but yeah, it's just, you just have to do it. You know, you just have to put your best foot forward, do whatever the fuck it is. Like, mm-hmm. just put your forefront in that space.
Mm-hmm. And if it makes you happy, keep doing it. Let me ask you this. What are you grateful for in 2023? I know we just got done with Thanksgiving and Christmas. What are you grateful for in life this year, man?
Well, as always, I'm grateful for my family. Yeah. As, you know, my family has been with me through thick and thin.
Amen, amen,
you
know, amen,
amen. I've been a fuck up and a half, you know, and I appreciate their support and everything. Thank you. I've been thankful for my landlady. She's very nice. Shout out to my landlady. Shout out to the neighborhood. Shout out to La Mesa. Shout out to College Area. Shout out to San Diego State. Shout out to San Diego. I'm grateful for God. I'm very grateful for God, and I'm very grateful for this space and this voice that you've given me right now. Thank you.
Amen.
To 2023.
Sir. Amen, dude. Let me ask you this. What are your tips for an artist to stay consistent?
Oh man, just again, like, do what you want to do. That's what I mean by stay to your heart. Like, whatever the fuck you want to do, you have to do it. Like, that's really what is gonna keep you going, is understanding how important it is to just whatever it is you want to do. You want to fucking jump around your underwear outside and be a fucking lunatic, do it. Just fucking do it right now. That's all you got to do, is just follow your heart, whatever it is you're trying to accomplish. If you put time in it, you're going to see rewards for it.
Mm-hmm.
That's as real as it gets, you know?
If it makes you happy and it gives you a purpose and reason, I say do it. What makes Ocean Beach special? There's something in the air, bro.
It's a cultural hotspot. Yeah, it's like so many different people are there at the same time doing their own thing, and they all have their space to do it, you know? Yeah. But it's not like anybody's going to stop you from, you know, just joining in on a group, doing whatever, you know? I've met a lot of great people out there in OB, you know?
For all the folks listening, describe an Ocean Beach show.
An Ocean Beach show?
Usually
gets pretty wild, you know? There's a lot of alcohol, you know? A lot of weed, usually, depending on the crowd. It's a vibe, and everybody, what I like is everybody gets, you know, their voice, and everybody gets heard, you know?
No,
when you're on the show, you're on the show, you know? They're so respectful, and they're so nice out there. Shout out to OB, that whole fucking area, man. It's a good spot.
Yo, man, any other shout outs? Anything you want to announce before we wrap it up?
Not much right now. Just shout out to SD Music Room. Shout out to Yazzie. Shout out to Sante Prince. You gotta remember where you come from. Shout out to Queen B. Shout out to Alma.
Shout out to Queen B.
You know, fucking shout out to so Dustin. Many... Shout out to the Holding Company. Shout out to Newport Avenue. Shout out to Ocean Beach. Shout out to Poway. Shout out to man. You know. Shout out to everyone in our area, man. San Diego County. It's the best place to be, bro.
So many classic shows at the Queen Bees too. I cannot forget all the classic shows, man. Like, brings me back to the time when I was new to San Diego. I arrived here in 2010, and I was 26.
Yeah, interesting.
And I was that MC trying to find my way in the city. Like, where do I go? You know, and Queen Bees was one of the first ones that I hit up for open mics. I've done some shows there, and good times in Queen Bee. And shout out to all the artists in San Diego. Everybody out here doing it.
Shout out to Amon Ra.
Ah.
Shout out to DJ Red Light. Shout out to Karen. Shout out
Red Light.
To where we really fucking come from, the Queen Bee's open mic, Lyrical Exchange. Lyrical Exchange.
Yes. Damn,
oh, man.
I used that,
dude. Oh, man. That's where we come from, bro.
Fucking shout Red Light, dude.
DJ Red Light.
You know what? I gotta hit up Red Light to do the show.
Yeah, dude. Hit up Red Light.
Red Light.
See what you can do.
One of the coolest cats. I did a lot of shows with Red Light, too, and... a lot of the open mics we did in La Mesa. Yeah.
Yeah, dude.
Cool, man. Yeah. Well, look, I hope everybody listening, all my creatives out there, I hope you all have a good 2024. And yeah, man, Hemo, thanks for doing this.
Hey, no problem, man. Hey, have a good one.
One love.
Everyone, peace. Thank you. Appreciate you. Check out my shit, bro.
No doubt.
There you
no
go.
Doubt.
Yo. Cult of Hemo. Still listen to Cult of Hemo. Did You Know Hemo Raps, Fat Whitey LP, Gut Buster Volume 1. Shout out to my whole catalog. Hey, listen to that shit. I got this Project Lost and Found coming up. And then Bryant Boys is the project I'm going for, that J Dilla one right now. So, yeah, give me a listen. You know, follow my Instagram, Hemo the Person, H-E-M-O, the person. That's me on all platforms. Thanks, bro.
I love it. Thank you. Peace.